board, and we'll call this meeting of the House Ag Policy Committee meeting to order on a Thursday with a possible storm coming this weekend. So enjoy Minnesota springtime this weekend. First, we don't have enough for a quorum yet, so we have some minutes to approve, but we'll wait. We now have a quorum. So with that in mind, would Representative Munson care to look at the minutes of the meeting of March 15th and move to approve those?
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the minutes.
March 15th. Very good. Thank you. All in favor of those minutes, say aye.
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 Disapprove, same sign. Minutes are approved. And Representative Lewitt has checked the minutes of the March 20th meeting. And would he so move?
I would move those minutes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lewitt. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved from that meeting as well. And getting underway today, we have the first bill up is House File 3472. Representative Pearson, would you move that bill, please?
I move the House File 3472 as amended be referred to the General Register.
And with that, Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Chair.
Bill.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Thank you, members. We already took testimony last week, and just kind of a quick run over of the bill. House File 3472 provides for guidelines for transportation and importation of saltwater aquatic life. It is similar to the current statutes that govern transportation and importation of aquatic life, freshwater, you know, for freshwater species primarily, but these are more applicable to saltwater species for human food. This has been drafted with the participation of the Department of Agriculture, the DNR, the MPCA, and the Board of Animal Health, and with the expertise of the USDA Animal and Plant and Health Inspection Service. MDA is currently and remains the license and permit coordinator for aquaculture, and the DNR remains the one that issues the license and permits. There is no fiscal impact as far as the report that came back, and I ask you for your support. So thank you.
And members, we had this bill up in policy about a week ago and had the A1 amendment in your packets that was approved, and today we have the fiscal note that indicates no fiscal impact. So that's the emphasis of today's meeting. Questions from members? And if none are apparent, anybody from the audience who would care to comment on the bill? If not, final comments, Representative.
Thank you for your support, Chair Anderson and members.
And with that, Representative Pearson.
I'd like to renew my motion that House File 3472 as amended be referred to the General Register.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion is adopted and the bill is on its way. Representative. Next up, House File 3962. Good morning, Chair Hamilton. Good
morning, Mr. Chairman.
I move your bill 3962 refer to the Committee of Civil Law and Data Practices. Chair Hamilton, present your bill.
excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. This bill was brought to me by the Department of Agriculture and the Board of Animal Health. And basically what we're doing is we're applying data practice standards already in statute, equally treating everybody or all the same when it comes to data practices. And I think an important point to make is that the board keeps owner and dog movement data for the purpose of animal health and is not intended to be an organization that has database of who owns what animals, and they can be tracked in outside by outside organizations. Mr. Chairman, I do have Dr. Thomas, Thompson, here to testify as well.
Sorry. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
You know, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Chair Hamilton has a good synopsis of what this bill is about. The board does have very specific data privacy as it relates to agricultural data. When we added the breeder bill, the dog and cat breeder bill, there was additional data privacy that went into place. And as Chair Hamilton pointed out, that We would like this also to apply to kennels, so it is across the board for the board.
Very good. Questions from members? Anybody in the audience would care to comment on the bill? Good morning, ma'am. Take a seat at the witness stand and give us your name and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Ann Olson, excuse me, and I am with an organization called Animal Folks. We deal with providing services to professionals such as working with veterinarians, law enforcement, the courts on animal law. We do oppose this bill. We believe that it will prohibit.
Could you speak into the mic a little bit more? Even my cold is stuffing my ears, but I can't hear very well.
I'll try to project louder.
Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Thank you.
Yes. We do oppose this bill. We do believe that government's role is really about providing transparency, openness, and an informed public. We believe that this would withhold documents. Just three quick points. Professor Kagan, Robert Kagan, who's a retired professor, but he's a legal scholar in regulatory law. He says one of the core things about regulatory law is data. If you can provide data to the public knows what's going on, such as us, we're able to see what a state agency is doing. It's also to provide to consumers so they know what's happening before purchasing. It's also to the industry, so the industry can sort out the bad apples. By removing this data, you're not providing that information to create an informed public. Also, a reference was made to the breeder law. Yes, this information, when the breeder law was passed a number of years ago, this was added to this data practices. It's actually not worked. It's created because no data about the breeding facilities is provided to the public. We get calls from consumers who are saying, how do I purchase an animal, a dog or a cat? And they're not able to obtain any information from the board to be able to look at inspection reports, and then afterwards they get frustrated by that. We, too, aren't able to look at anything from the Board of Animal Health to be able to see what kind of reports are done or how big is the industry or other ideas that could improve the industry, similar to, like, the press wanting it. What happened with elder abuse? When they actually obtained documents, it led to better improvement of an industry. And then sometimes also, if any security issues come up, the Minnesota Data Practices Act, this is only a small section. There is quite a bit of language in the Minnesota Data Practices Act that allows a state agency to still take action and deny. We've been denied multiple requests. We do requests to the state, to local, to federal governments. So there is other language in the Minnesota Data Practices Act which a state agency could use. Some could maybe interpret that incorrectly or abuse that authority, but it is there for use. It's a well-written law. So we ask that you not pass this, and please consider we do support the role of government to be able to create openness, transparency, and inform the public rather than control all data that's given to the public. Thank you very much.
Ms. Olson, maybe I missed it. I apologize for that, but are you speaking on behalf of an organization or for yourself?
Yes, the organization is called Animal Folks, and we deal with issues pertaining to animal cruelty and also to animal law, working collectively with law enforcement, the courts, veterinarians, and others in the field.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Hamilton, comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, we are applying, this bill would apply the data practices already in statute to the licensed kennels and the dealers, so it would treat everybody the same when it comes to data practices.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions on Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the chair. I know how data privacy and stuff can really whip some things up. And when we change that, and I understand that's why you're going to civil law, and I fortunately got off that committee long ago, what will not be available to the public underneath your bill that is available today?
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Mahoney. It's my understanding that it would not be the specific location of the individuals in question as far as the breeders or the kennels. So the name of the entity and their specific location.
Representative Mahoney.
The organizations such as the witness that was here a moment ago would still be able to find out inspection reports, penalties that were imposed upon a particular breeder or kennel. They just wouldn't be able to figure out which kennel it was.
Chair Hamilton or Dr. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is correct. So that specific person's name or address, that would be redacted. We have a policy in place at the board that if someone asks for, say, kennel data for one county, they are provided all the information, but that personal information is redacted. Also within the board statute, there is the provision that if it's a question about animal or human health or safety or law enforcement purposes, the information is given. So if there is a consumer that has a health issue, a zoonotic issue that they are concerned about, they can ask the board for that information. We will give it to them under that basis.
Representative Mahoney.
So if I'm looking for a new dog this fall and I want to check on the kennel that I'm buying it from, how do I find that out?
Dr. Thompson.
Because if I'm, Mr. Chair, to respond, to further go on, you know, if I'm paying $500 or $1,000 or $2,000, which a good hunting dog is easily found at $2,000, if more, not more, that's a big chunk of change. And I want to know that that kennel operator has a good record. I want to see his or her inspection records. I want to know how they treat their animals. Because that's a large investment, and even more frustrating if that hunting dog turns out to be a bust. That's even more important than the $2,000 or $3,000.
Dr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you know, that is a situation where if there were, say, a brucellosis issue at that kennel, we would inform you of that. But over and above that, we would recommend that you visit the kennel, that you talk to other owners and see if they know anything about that kennel and do your own research. The information that we would have wouldn't probably bear on whether or not you're going to get a good dog from the kennel for hunting.
Representative?
Mr. Chair, I will advise you that if you're advising me to go check animal health at a particular kennel, I'll tell you, why don't you go to an oil refinery and just take a tour and see if it's running correctly. And it's not much help. So that's the problem that I would have as I go trying to find a dog that is acceptable this fall. So just leave it at that. I think this is not a correct bill, but I think you're cutting people out of information.
I guess I would just add that the Board of Animal Health probably isn't in the position to be recommending businesses. I think I would have a little bit of a heartburn with that, that they would recommend certain kennels based on some objective criteria as far as how they would treat their dogs and such. That's pretty subjective, I think. But again, I understand your point, but not quite sure that's the job of the Board of Animal Health. Chair Hamilton.
And Mr. Chairman, I'd like the doctor to weigh in on this also. However, Representative Mahoney, if there was a health issue, that would be made available.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that would be. So that's an exception for human or animal health or safety or law enforcement purposes. We would make that information available.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, it is a piece of the information that as a consumer, I want to be able to go to all areas. I mean, If I'm buying a new dishwasher, I can go to any number of different places to find information, probably more than I ever want. Finding out from my next-door neighbor or the guy that just bought the new hunting dog is subjective to his or her opinion. Sometimes it's nice to have a clearer understanding of what is in the official record. I'm Mr. Chair, you know what? I think this bill has the votes because no one, so I'm just going to be quiet from now on.
Chair Hamilton?
And Mr. Chairman, you know, the Board of Animal Health, their task is to make sure that the animals are healthy. And, you know, anything else when it comes to promoting a breed of a dog or you know, anything such as that, the genetics or whatever, I would say that would fall, you know, in the purview of the kennel itself to promote those other characteristics. But again, the Board of Animal Health is charged with making sure the animals are healthy.
Representative Poston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair, I understand exactly what you're saying, but are there organizations like the American Kennel Club and so on that rate kennels?
Dr. Thompson or Chair Hamilton?
Yes, Mr. Chair, yes, there are those organizations, both, you know, regional organizations and national organizations that look at that.
Follow-up, Representative.
And those ratings are geared more to what Representative Mahoney is asking for than animal health.
Dr. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, Representatives, yes, I would say so. I'm not intimately familiar with those organizations, but I believe that's what they do, yes.
Follow up again.
Oh, thank you.
Questions, comments? Seeing none, final comments, Chair Hamilton?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the discussion, and I ask for your support.
And with that, I would move that House File 3962 be re-referred to the Committee of Civil Law Data Practices. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion passes, and the bill is on its way.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the
committee. Representative Daniels. Next bill on the agenda is House File 3836.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 3836 be referred to the Committee on Environmental and Natural Resources Policy and Finance.
Thank you very much. And I believe the bill author has come. Representative Torkelson, you're up. House File 3836. Pretty good timing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Timing is everything, you know.
And I believe we have a couple of amendments. Let's check on those before we put the bill in its correct order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do not have the amendments before me.
Representative Daniels, I believe you do.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the H3836A1 amendment.
And Chair Torkelson, would you care to comment what this amendment does?
I would ask staff to comment as to what the amendment does, Mr. Okay. Chair. They're coming from every direction now. Okay. I have 3 copies of the amendment.
We'll have to check on that efficiency
really
of this committee.
There's
yeah.
lots of it floating around.
Good morning, sir. Could you talk to the amendment?
Yes. Good morning,
Mr. Yourself.
Chairman, members. My name is Al Kane. I serve as Chief Engineer for the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and I also serve as the Coordinator for the Stakeholder Drainage Work Group. Just so that you're familiar with who that is, too, there's a handout that is a fact sheet about the Drainage Work Group in your packet, and it's been around since 2006. It was born from a study that involved a advisory committee, and they decided to stick together to look at drainage law and other provisions. And we put forth 6 sets of consensus recommendations since 2007. On the back of that handout, you can see the list of them. And the most recent ones are what's before you today, The amendment A1 is to add some additional provisions, clarifications for one of the recommendations of the work group, which is to better enable the agricultural best management practices loan program administered by the Department of Agriculture to work better for drainage authorities serving on behalf of the benefited landowners of Chapter 103E drainage systems. We worked with the Department of Agriculture a couple of years ago to develop a fact sheet about use of the Ag BMP loan program for ditch buffer strips and other environmental practices. And in the first iterations of them working with drainage authorities, they found that it was burdensome to make it work because of the definition of a borrower. So they've tried to create some streamlining updates of that section of law, section 17.117, and amendment A1 is some further work on that to make it workable for drainage authorities to serve as an integrator, if you will, on behalf of the benefited landowners of the drainage system. And the work group is particularly focused on what you see in the second handout. If you have one that is dated 2/27/18, that's where we were charged, the drainage work group was charged by the legislature to evaluate and make recommendations to accelerate drainage system acquisition of pitch buffer strips and alternative practices. So at the top of that handout, you'll see a link to a report. That report was provided to the legislature on February 1, and one of the recommendations in it, which is actually at the bottom of page 2. So the policy and procedure recommendation we came to understand actually needed to be a statutory change recommendation, like some of the others that are in this document. What you have in that document was the initial language that was provided by the Department of Agriculture, and now they have some additional clarifications, and that's what's in Amendment A1.
Thank you, Mr. King. Mainly a technical change. I do have to ask, at the very bottom of the page, the amendment line 120 talks about, on page 3 of the bill, deleting lines 26 through 29 and strike old language. Can you explain that, please? Let's check in with Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, the effect of line 20 along with line 1.2 is effectively to change language in statute now that limits eligibility for Ag BMP loans to rural landowners. And then the language on lines 9 and 10 would essentially define landowner without reference to rural. So the implication is that loans could be made to urban landowners as well.
What? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Having heard that, any questions from committee members? If not, all that approve the amendment A1, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. And again, Mr. Kane or representative, explain your second amendment. That would be the A2 amendment. Mr. Kane?
Mr. Chairman, members, another handout that should be in your packet is dated 3/20/18. This is a piece of work that the Drainage Work Group has been working on for nearly 3 years to add the ability for drainage authorities to use a runoff and sediment delivery option for repair cost apportionment. And this amendment includes all of the provisions that you see in that document that's in your packet. If we want to go through those in detail, I can.
Let's just get the amendment approved first, Mr. Kane. Okay?
Very well.
Representative Daniels, would you move to approve actually both the first and second, but in this case, the A2 amendment?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I move both the H3836A1 amendment and I move the 3836A2 amendment.
All those in favor of those two amendments, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. And the amendments are approved. Judge Torkelson, to your bill as amended.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I've attended a few meetings of the Drainage Work Group. These are a very dedicated bunch of folks that do some detailed work that is absolutely necessary, but many of us find hard to understand. This work is very detailed, but it's very important. And I want to publicly thank the Drainage Work Group for their work. We had a little trouble right near the end of coming to consensus, and that's why you see that second amendment. They did finally come to consensus at a slightly late date, but they did come to consensus to really do a lot more work than we originally anticipated might get done this year. So I'd like to publicly thank the group for making that final step, and I strongly support their work and its relationship to some other work we're doing on the ground, the name of which I will not mention.
Questions from committee members? Vice Chair Backer.
And we're talking about the whole bill with both amendments, correct?
Correct. They've both been approved.
Chair Torkelson, I understand you've been busy this morning and so forth. So I do have some concerns about this bill, and I have talked to the stakeholders before here. Number one, my first concern deals with environmental services. This is a ag bill. This is where we're at right now, and we're entering drainage law into this bill. This significantly changes drainage law. But one of the concerns that I have is with 111, we're expanding that outside of ag producers and also landowners. So I know I've talked to stakeholders beforehand, so I do have a significant concern about that. I would like to see some changes there before it gets out of our next committee. But money is not intended from this loan program to fund organizations that are not producers and so forth. So that 111 greatly concerns me. Quite frankly, I don't like it. Just being quite frank here with that, because I'm from an ag producer area. That money's for ag owners and farmers and so forth. Another concern that I have with this.
Just a second, when you say 111, you mean the entire line or just one provision on 111?
Well, what I would like to do, and I talked to MDA last night and this morning briefly, and they've given us commitment that they work with me on this, but it really should just focus to rural landowners or local units of government, including drainage authorities, watershed districts, and counties, and ag supply businesses. That is what that loan program is for, and this loan program is expanding it to other environmental services that I don't think that was the intent of the author or the agencies that put that together. So that's a concern of mine there, Chair. Okay. Both chairs.
Okay. Comments? We move on. Mr. King?
Mr. Chairman, members, Mr. Backer, Representative Backer did speak with us this morning, and I think we have agreed that, yes, we will work on that with the Department of Agriculture to find resolution.
Okay. Follow-up, Representative Backer?
Yeah, I have a couple other things that I like, but if that's okay, Chair.
The floor is yours.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Another concern that I have with this bill, and I have not vented these amendments fully at all, but I was looking at the initial bill. If we also go to the last page, that 612 and 613, a concern that I have there when we lower it from 50% to 26% is what we're doing is we are really having the minority of the landowners taking control of the majority. I know Mr. Keene and I professionally disagree on that, and we've talked about working on that before the next stop, but that is a concern of mine. Whenever in this body we have to have the majority rule, and again, the only place that we see 26% is in drainage law. Now, this is to establish a buffer strip. Now, Amendment 2 greatly expands this bill to really being a drainage law bill, and that is a concern of mine that I would like to work with the author and the agencies before we get to our next stop, because Amendment 2 is really really changing a lot of things in drainage law that's been around for over 100 years. So that is a concern of mine. Another concern of mine deals with correction of error that was made at the time. This is line 6.14 and 6.15. Correction of an error that was made at the time the proceedings that established the drainage system. What concerns me about that is if there is an error that was done, redetermined 3 or 5 years ago, there's really not an easy way, because redetermination of benefits and damages is not an easy way to correct errors. So that also concerns me, as I shared with you there, Al, before our meeting. So those two things are a big concern. And then Amendment 2 is completely changing our drainage law. And that's pretty significantly. So I would also like to visit with the stakeholders before the next stop on that. And if I have that commitment, I would appreciate it. And Yusuf, we have that commitment. I appreciate that.
Mr. Kane, I do believe that 26% does have some standing in drainage law. Would you care to comment on that?
Mr. Chairman and members, within drainage law, there are two other types of activities that can be petitioned by 26% of the benefited landowners. That includes improvements and petitioned repairs. And I think a key reason why the work group was comfortable with reducing this percentage for this is that the drainage authority still retains the authority to not act on that petition if they don't believe it's in the best interest of the system and the benefit of landowners. I would point you to line 6.16, where a key word is may. So the drainage authority may appoint viewers and do a redetermination of benefits and damages. They don't have to. So that's the reason the work group, I believe, was comfortable with making this 26% consistent with two other places in law, but still recognizing there's a check and balance on that by the drainage authority.
Mr. Kane, just a question I would have, and I've just heard about this anecdotally. When some folks submit a petition for a repair, for example, and then find out how expensive it's going to be, they tried to withdraw the petition, but they said once it had started, they couldn't do that. Could you comment on that?
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm not a lawyer, but I believe that, in fact, there is provisions for withdrawal of petitions, too. I can't quote you what section of drainage law that is. So I'm surprised that, in fact, folks might believe that there's no way to pull out. I believe that there is in drainage law.
Okay, and I just heard that anecdotally, just wanted to ask or clarify that. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Torkelson, thanks for bringing this here. I guess just a comment. So those of us in the room that have been here since 2015 and have had the journey with this buffer law even from when it first began, it's been very complex. It's been very troublesome to me in many different ways, and a lot of times we say, well, we'll work on it to make it better. So I'm asking for your commitment to do this. This was already a very complex bill to try and decipher what exactly it meant. And then we have these amendments that were added onto it that, as Representative Backer said, completely changes or completely adds on to what we're going to be discussing. I'm not in Environment Committee, and I'm being asked to pass this along with the hope that we can work on this. So I guess I too ask for your dedication on this, because there's some things in this that I'm highly concerned about. That I don't think represents my district well. And if we're gonna touch this buffer law yet one more time before the end of this session, which I heard we weren't going to do, but now we are, okay, I hope that we certainly get this right and get it to a place where I can confidently vote yes and go back and look at the landowners in my district. Because I can tell you along the way, I have not been able to do that. we pass things and I go back and they're even more upset than before. So we need to get this right, and so I really appreciate, Chair, our work on this, that we can make sure that we can make everyone happy with what's happening here. Thank you.
I don't believe there was a question there, just
no
a comment. Okay. Very good. Other questions? Mr. Kane, here.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, one of the things that I think I can very clearly state with confidence is that the Stakeholder Drainage Work Group is a broad group of stakeholders, and if anything, we get criticized for taking too much time to vet things. And this one, I believe, really has been vetted very, very strongly to ensure that we can recommend to the legislature language that we believe is good, that it's we do everything we can to ensure that we don't have unintended consequences. So having worked on some of this for a long time, I think that we really have worked very hard to try to address the concerns that you may have in your district.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've spoken to some of those stakeholders, and they don't like some of the stuff in here. Now, I know that a working group has to come to some form of consensus, but I am not elected by the stakeholder group. I'm elected by the people in my district. And when they have concerns, I need to bring them forward and need to address them. I'm the one that has to vote on this bill in the end. And so I will agree to continue to work with the stakeholder group that you're talking about and with you and with all these different people. But it's my responsibility not just to take the word of the stakeholder group, but to ensure that the people that own the land in my district are protected under this law. Thank you.
Representative Clark Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm tempted to ask about Menlars, but I won't, Representative.
I will not allow that.
Yeah, I'll keep it at hand. And I want to pick up on, first of all, I want to make a comment. I'm impressed that you work with consensus. And it's interesting to me that when you reflect on the democracy in local organizations, almost all votes in the city council, almost all votes in the county commission, almost all votes at the church council and the food shelf board are done by consensus. And I just want to express a deep appreciation. And as I prepared secondary social studies teachers, I always said, this is a skill you've got to develop, how do you work towards consensus. And I'm very impressed that this group works from a standpoint of consensus. I know that's hard, and I just deeply respect the energy that goes into that. So I assume it was consensus that dealt with line 1.11. And Representative Backer, thanks for bringing that up. I'm curious about that as well. And we both sit on the Environmental Committee, so we will get to see this later. But I'd like to, what was the thinking on the consensus that was developed to change the language in line 1.11?
Mr. Kane.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, some of the language that you have before us, we were depending upon the Department of Agriculture to come up with, to modify the program that they administer, and we didn't have a lot of discussion about specific language for that program. While we clearly had support for the concept of we want to enable the Ag BNP program to work better for landowners and drainage authorities, to streamline it so that in fact it can work much easier as a financing mechanism via low interest loans for landowners.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to hear what the Department of Agriculture has to say about that.
I believe they're here. And good morning. Identify yourself and proceed, Ms.
Mr.
Place.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Whitney Place. I am the legislative director at the Department of Agriculture. The reasoning for removal of the word rural was actually to address issues with some other projects that we do. I'm sorry, what part of the bill are we talking about?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was referring to line 1.11. Okay. Which is where water quality cooperatives are stricken and replaced with approved environmental service providers.
Okay, sorry about that, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Place, go ahead.
So we wanted to expand the definition of environmental service providers. If you see on lines 2.27 to 2.32, this really expands the ability for us to make loans to entities such as drainage authorities so that they could loan out to landowners within the drainage authority to implement buffers. It also includes, you know, public or private organizations, which I know there are some concerns with, but that would include organizations like a townhouse association that's doing a cooperative on, like, a septic system, or maybe like a lake association is doing an ag BMP. So that just expands kind of the definition of who would be able to utilize this program and how.
Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that would, one of the concerns I've had with the implementation of buffers is just the capacity to implement it, put them in. Would this make it easier for the buffers to be implemented? So if I don't have the equipment, I don't have the expertise, I can hire somebody down the road to do it for me, that sort of thing?
Ms. Place?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, especially along drainage ditches, this would allow a drainage authority to be able to organize kind of implementation along the whole ditch. So it's just not an individual landowner project, but they could do the whole ditch kind of as one project.
Okay. Ms. Place, as long as you're there, I had a question as well in that same area, line 227 to 232. You specifically define environmental service providers, but then you add, but not limited to. Doesn't that really pretty much open up the definition again on line 2.30?
Mr. Chair, yes, and we have committed to working with Representative Backer and Representative Miller on some of this language to make it more restrictive.
Thank you. Representative Backer?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. There's really a comment here. Just, and I appreciate your comment with the drainage work group working consensually, but just like Representative Miller, I have several individuals in my district that will not like this amendment too. And so with your commitment, I appreciate that because I've been hearing about this all summer, all fall, the concerns that they have about this. So as long as we can work on this and come to a win-win situation, then I'm willing to work. But as it is right now, I have people that I represent, several people, and I represent a very large ag area, just like Representative Miller does and Chair Torkelson and Chair Anderson, that has concerns with this amendment too, outside of my other ones. So thank you.
More witnesses, Jennifer Birkbaum and Emily Javins. Good morning, welcome, and identify yourselves.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Jennifer Birkbaum, and I represent the Association of Minnesota Counties, an association with all representing all 87 counties in the state. I would like to thank Representative Torkelson for authoring House File 3836. I would also like to extend our thanks and appreciation to Al Kane for facilitating the drainage work group. With consensus, we can be a very difficult group to wrangle in at times. AMC, as you may, or counties, as many of you may know, also serve as drainage authorities along with watershed districts. Some counties do who have public drainage systems. And we would like to speak in support of House File 3836. The goal of this bill is to provide options and new tools that drainage authorities could utilize to help landowners comply with the buffer law. The Ag BMP loan program changes are something that we are supporting. I understand there's some concern with how the language is currently drafted in the bill, and we're very open to working with members on providing some language that would be more comfortable for members. And the whole goal is just to be able for drainage authorities to access that program to compensate landowners sooner to purchase that buffer easement. We also think that Section 7 of the bill is kind of a nice option with landowner consent. It allows a drainage authority to cede the buffer for the landowner, and then once that ditch is redetermined, the counties would work with landowners on Foley Cup and saving them for the easement. And then the rest of the bill, we feel, are improvements under the current drainage, or to the current drainage law. And as Mr. Kane mentioned, those provisions have been thoroughly vetted through the drainage work group. So finally, we would just like to thank Representative Torkelson again for bringing this bill forward, and Al for his efforts with the drainage work group. And we would like to thank the committee and Mr. Chair for your time this morning as well. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Ms. Birkbaum, you mentioned that you're representing the counties. Have you had any feedback from counties in the western part of the state, for example, that did have concerns with this? Have you heard any feedback from them?
Mr. Chair, we do have two members, county commissioners, who serve on the drainage work group. One is from Renville County and the other is from Kandy, Ohio. They both support the provisions in this bill. I know Renville County specifically is looking at trying to access the Ag BMP loan program, and we feel that these changes are necessary for them to access that. We have shared the information with the rest of our commissioners, and we haven't heard any concerns thus far.
Question from Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question for the testifier. How much money is currently available in this best practices fund, money that's unencumbered?
Mr. Chair and Representative Munson, I feel that the Department of Agriculture may be able to answer that question better, because counties don't actually manage this Ag BMP program.
Is Department of Ag still here, Ms. Place? And hopefully she has the number at the top of her head.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I unfortunately do not have the number, but our staff did do some analysis of the program to ensure that our funds could cover these changes.
Okay.
I can share that with the committee later.
Okay, if you could get that and give it to the committee administrators so we can all have that information, okay?
I will do that.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative?
Yeah, and just my concern is that the funds would go to certain landowners and not others. They wouldn't be distributed equally, and I'm assuming that there wouldn't be enough money in the fund to cover, you know, accelerating this for all landowners equally. So it would really come down to counties having, programs in place, ready and geared up to request these funds, and then distributed to the landowners in their counties before others. Is that correct?
Ms. Place?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the way the AgBMP loan program works is we actually send money out to counties. So I think we have partnerships with every county in the state, and then they distribute the money. If the money in the counties is not used, it goes back to the fund, and then we distribute it to counties that have additional projects. So it actually is distributed pretty geographically equally.
So the funding would go back to the counties, and they would actually administer this. Is that correct, Ms. Price?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Follow up again? Representative?
Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. The question list is exhausted. Emily Javins, welcome. Identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Anderson and members of the committee. My name is Emily Javins. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts. I am an engineer by trade, and I have some specialty in drainage, and have also served at a watershed district, serving as a ditch administrator and ditch inspector. Have been participating on the subcommittees that have worked on this legislation, and I did want to lend our support for the watershed districts on this bill. I did want to thank Representative Torkelson for working on this with us, and also Chief Al Kane. He works tirelessly on this, and the consensus process is exhausting, but it does. All voices are heard. And with that, Jennifer said exactly what I would want to say also, but we do lend our support to this, and if there's any questions, I would be happy to answer those also.
Thanks, Ms. Javins. Questions? Anybody in the audience who would care to testify on behalf of or against the bill? Seeing none, final comments, Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I sincerely want to make sure that questions are answered and concerns are addressed that have been expressed by the members of this committee, and I'll do anything I can to help make sure that those questions are answered and addressed. The only comment I would have, Mr. Chair, is a lot of this work is around the redetermination of benefits. The redetermination of benefits is a rather cumbersome process, and this work will try to make it faster and cheaper and quicker. Not all landowners are supportive of redeterminations because in some cases landowners are receiving benefits from drainage systems but not paying their fair share to the maintenance thereof. Getting these redeterminations done is the fair and right thing to do, and if this and this work, I believe, will make that redetermination process faster and cheaper, and that should be good for all of us. With that, Mr. Chair, thank you for hearing the bill, and I appreciate the work that everyone has done to get it here.
Representative Daniels. Oh, I'm sorry, just a second. Last question from Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It really isn't a question, but it is to Representative Torkelson. I think we can all agree that he is not a pushover, and he actually does work through issues. You know, sometimes we don't agree with how he, from our side of the aisle, with some conclusions that may come. But I fully support that Representative Torkelson is the right person to carry this bill, because I think he's the one who can thread the needle, make sure that all sides are heard, and that the bill that's going to come forward is the bill that continues that consensus building and meets with greater support. So I apologize that I'm speaking after Representative Torkelson and his concluding remarks, but I just wanted to make that point. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Chair. I renew my motion that House File 3836, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Environmental and Natural Resources Policy and Finance.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion is adopted. The bill is passed and on its way. Thanks, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next bill, I believe, may be the last bill on the agenda. Maybe not. I guess it's my bill. Vice Chair Banter.
We switch position.
As the chair moves to the front there, the next bill on the agenda is House File 4133. Represent Chair Anderson, would you like to move the bill to put it before the committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would certainly like to do. These mics are very strong here. I would like to do that, put that bill before the committee, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson moves House File 4133. Representative Anderson, please present your bill. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members. And to do that correctly, I'm going to call on the legislative person from the department in this place.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ms. Place, please testify, share your thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity to do a walkthrough of our policy bill. And thank you to Representative Anderson for carrying the bill this session. So I'll just kind of walk through the different sections of the bill. So Section 1, the intent of this section is to provide municipalities looking at developing community solar or wind projects an avenue to fund feasibility studies. A feasibility study is necessary to receive funding for a project, and these studies cost around $25,000. We've heard from stakeholders that this language may need to be tweaked a little bit, and we're willing to work on creating language that will accomplish this policy objective. Section 2 of the bill is a semicolon, the addition of a semicolon, to align the state's commercial feed law with the federal definition of drug under our feed chapter. Sections 3 through 5 establish a new meat processing license category for custom-exempt food handlers. The addition of a custom-exempt food handler license would allow small operators who only process animals as custom-exempt to be licensed using the correct regulations rather than trying to fit them into a category that does not accurately reflect their scope of operation. In this category of meat processing, the product is all labeled not for sale and is returned to the owner of the animal for personal use. This does not add or change a license fee. It simply creates another category using the same licensing fee structure to accommodate a different business model. For example, MDA staff frequently encounter situations where custom-exempt operators believe that they can operate at a retail-exempt operation because they have the retail license, but have not actually done the required plan review and don't meet the retail food requirements. Also, this helps new businesses that are only intending to conduct custom-exempt operations at the outset, but intend to transition to retail later, as they can be issued this type of license more easily and with fewer requirements. Moving on to Section 6 of the bill, which is on page 7, starting at 7.17. This section changes the egg statutes to expand the time that eggs can be held by retailers past the pack date. It allows grade A eggs to be held for 46 days past the pack date, which more appropriately reflects the length of time eggs can meet the grade A standards, rather than holding them to the same standard as grade AA eggs. This change creates consistency with other states' requirements. It is part of a broader effort by MDA to update requirements for egg manufacturing and sales and to write plain language statutes. Manufacturers would be able to operate under the standards that mimic federal standards, which reduces complexity in the regulatory system. Section 7 through 9 are additions to the dairy chapter revisions that we made last session. In Section 7, the milk storage requirements are reinserted, which include a waiver for the 72-hour time limit for milk pickups. This is especially critical for some of Minnesota's dairy farmers that may not be able to afford more frequent pickup times. Section 8 of the bill updates requirements for labeling of milk products to include the option of using addresses of distributors. This statute is critical for milk traceability, but this change allows for flexibility for milk plants on how they label their product. Section 9 reinserts the labeling requirements for aged raw milk cheese to include the label requirement that states cheese made with unpasteurized milk is aged for more than 60 days. Section 10 of the bill removes the word disease from the emergency powers of the department so that we're able to address emergencies that are broader in scope than disease. This is consistent with other agriculture statutes related to emergencies. Sections 11 through 9 deal with the advanced biofuel and renewable chemical production incentive. These changes are intended to better define what is eligible for a production incentive payment under this program, which was passed with the intent of encouraging commercial-scale production of advanced biofuels, renewable chemicals, and thermal energy production from biomass. Section 11 and 12 define the term biomass and renewable chemical, and you will see these terms carried throughout the next provisions. In implementing this program, our staff noticed the definition of renewable chemical was unclear and could unintentionally result in payment for chemicals containing only a small fraction produced from renewable biomass. So sections 13 through 15 carry the new terms biomass into the appropriate areas of statute. Section 13 also defines what type of forest management plan is required, which is specified in the Sustainable Forest Incentive Act. Section 16 on lines 11.19 through 11.21 clarifies that only the percentage attributable to renewable chemicals in a blended product is eligible to receive payment. Section 17 is more clarifying language, as well as including the forest management plan language from the Sustainable Forest Incentive Act. These changes are necessary this session because the department is expecting claims for payment to be made in the coming year, and we want to ensure that the payments do reflect the intent of the program. We know that there are a couple other bills moving on this topic and want to work with all the stakeholders involved to make sure that the language is workable. Continuing on, Section 20
would allow for the use of livestock expansion loans to include purchase of an existing livestock farm. Currently, loans are only available to make improvements to an existing livestock operation. Section 22 through 21 are updates to the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit Program that was passed last session. Upon implementation of certifying beginning farmers for the new tax credit, changes were identified by our staff administering the program. Section 21 removes the restriction that does not allow this tax credit to be used by family members or spouses. This was actually a policy choice made by the department that those who want to stay in rural areas and farm should be incentivized to do so. This section also removes the requirement of submitting a profit potential statement. Through implementation of the program, our staff found this as an unnecessary step in the process. We would also like to add waiver language to the education requirement. This language is consistent with education requirements for the Rural Finance Authority loan programs. Section 22 clarifies the appeal process for the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit and aligns it with the appeal process used at the department for the Rural Finance Authority loan programs. Section 23 to the end of the bill are changes to the Rural Finance Authority programs. Section 23 through 24 are changes to the Disaster Recovery Loan Program and would allow for the use of the program under market disaster or economic emergencies and wouldn't limit the use to the program to a natural disaster or a state-declared emergency. This would add some financial options for farmers when situations arise, for example, when creameries cancel milk contracts or if trade agreements impact product movement, etc. This could be an option to keep a family farming under one of these challenges. Section 25 would allow the methane digester loan program to fund more than one methane digester project. This proposal came as a request from a constituent. Section 26 changes the loan limit amount from $40,000 to $100,000 for the livestock equipment loan program. This limit has not been changed since the beginning of the program, and rising costs and inflation make the $40,000 limit low and unusable in many cases. And finally, in Section 27, this proposal also changes the loan limit amount from $45,000 to $100,000 for the Farm Opportunity Loan Program, and this limit has also not been changed since the beginning of the program. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll take any questions.
Representative Munson has a question. Go ahead there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Testifier, I guess it's a great program. One of the concerns I had, and I just want to clarify, are you, by removing the family members from this list, are you then allowing children of farmers to take out loans?
Mr. Chair, Representative Munson, actually, this is for the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit Program, so yes, we would be allowing family members and children of farmers to utilize that tax credit.
Okay.
A follow-up, Representative Munson?
I guess I have concerns about the number of applicants that would come into the program for this. I just wanted to ask, maybe the Chair Anderson could follow up on that.
Chair Anderson, thanks, Mr. Chair. I share your concerns, but in consultation with the author of the bill, Representative Nielsen, there's a pretty good-sized pot of money available for the program, and in the first year so far, we haven't reached that the total amount. So it was a thought that let's get the full amount of money out there, and this was one way to make the program broader and allow the full amount of the $5 million to be utilized. And in consultation with the author, we thought that this was a good way to get the program up to speed at a faster pace. And I think we could look at it again. If it would fill up quickly, we could look at something else down the road. But as of right now, we want to get the whole program out there.
Follow-up, Representative Munson. It looks like you have a question.
Is there some type of check to ensure that the children of the farmer is actually actively participating and that it's their main source of income? Or, yeah, that'd be my question.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes. The job of the Department of Agriculture within this program is to certify that everything is accurate, and then we send that over to revenue so that they can actually implement the tax credit. So, yes, our staff definitely goes through, like, tax records and everything to make sure that it's a legitimate application.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Ruick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to both the department and the bill author. I just wanted to compliment particularly the element here on the biomass programs. Where I live, we don't do a lot of corn and beans, but we do rotational harvest of trees, and it's a huge big deal. We're on the cusp of some real breakthroughs, I think, in the chemistry of those various tree species and what we can do with them from a harvestable, sustainable standpoint. And so it's really important we continue to make adjustments as this program moves along. It is very important, and I encourage you to continue to open up discussions with the forestry folks, which are used to only talking to the DNR. I appreciate that work. It's really important to our area because we do grow trees and we do harvest them just on a little bit longer rotation than corn and beans. But thank you.
Okay, that was more of a comment there. So thank you, the representative. Representative Bly.
Thanks, Chair. And actually, I had a question very similar to what Representative Munson was asking about. I've worked on this bill a little bit, and I heard from both sides on that issue of the family members, and I can definitely see there are some situations where it'd be good, and some situations where it might be abused. And you give some reassurance, but are there other checks and balances that could make sure that it isn't being abused, and that although we want to get the money out there, we don't want to have it spent down so fast that it doesn't reach a wide group of people who need it. So I just a little more clarification. I understand that there's good arguments for and concerns, too.
Ms. Place?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bly, yes. I mean, if we want to add more clarification into the statute, we're very open to working with you on that. But, even just in the applications that have come in, our staff have kind of made some catches with situations where it's like, well, maybe this isn't actually a full-time farmer. So,
thank you.
Any other testifiers? Any other questions from members first? Representative Salk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is being left gingerly gray relative to defining what a child is, whether they qualify, and where and how it's appropriate. And the more it gets talked about, the more uncomfortable I'm getting, simply because of the grayness of the definition. So is there any way for you to help me out in understanding that these are people actually in the business and happen to be just children? Or there's the inference of a fair amount of flexibility and laxity relative to definition.
Is that misplaced?
Mr. Chair, Representative South. I don't have the entire statute before me, but I can assure you that we're not just giving tax credits to families that have been farming together or where it's just a small part of their income or where they're just signing off a portion of their farm to their children for the tax benefit. We are going through all of the paperwork to make sure that it is a beginning farmer and a new entity that is utilizing this tax credit.
Thank you for that. That's much clearer, if you will. The words actually were able to be tied together and end with a clarity, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. No. Chair Anderson, go ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I would agree that there's been a lot of thought and concern about opening up this program. And I can understand, you know, it may look as if it may not be more fair, but in not putting words in your mouth, but I would think if an application comes in from a father-son, for example, they would be looked at closely to make sure that it's legitimate and that it would qualify for the program, as any other application would be, but it would be looked at closely.
Ms. Place, is that... do you have any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I concur.
Okay, good. It looked like you had a comment, so there you go. Okay, Representative Munson.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to follow up. I think that so many of our farmers are transitioning farms to their children already. And I think that the program, without family members in it, is so great because it allows new people to come into the industry to get, you know, bridge that really big barrier of getting into farming. And I would prefer to not have family members allowed in this program. And if there was, and I don't know how much this program is currently being marketed to new farmers, but I would hope that we would really give preference to people coming into the industry who are not currently farming, or children of farmers using these tax credits to buy into operations that are not owned by the family, so that the parents, the people who are farming and the family don't get the benefit, but we're actually allowing children of farmers, and one child is taking over the family farm, and the other child wants to use this program to buy into another operation. Then that's my opinion, and I guess I do have a question. What's being done to advertise this program and to market it to people who are, you know, not children of farmers?
Well, Ms. Place.
Mr. Chair, Representative Munson, yes, the department has a whole website, and we've been promoting it through a press release and social media. But I do know that some of the organizations involved have been really great at getting the word out there about application or applying for the program. I understand your concerns about getting people who are not already in the farming system into farming, and certainly we want to encourage that as well. Out of the $5 million that was allocated for this program this year, only $550,000 of it has been encumbered so far. And so we want to make sure that, first of all, farmers can thrive in this, you know, pretty tough agricultural economy, even if they are related to, you know, someone who's already in the farming business. And we have discussed with stakeholders, perhaps there could be like a set aside for people who aren't related, or maybe underserved communities who don't always have the same opportunities with access to land. And I'm willing to work with you and other members of the committee and our stakeholders to see if that's something that you'd be interested in.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Pearson.
I've shared those concerns. I've probably been the most resistant to not amending this change that the department is asking for. But again, as Ms. Place has mentioned, the amount of funds that have been used, the $550,000 of the $5 million that we've allocated for this year, while we're only in the month of March, we know how the agrarian economy works. No one's going to be leasing land in December. So a lot of those commitments are being made right now and just for the next couple of months. So we're really just trying to open this up now, but I would encourage the members of this body, this committee, to keep an eye on this moving forward, because it's a nation first program. This beginning farmers tax credit isn't used anywhere else in the country that we're aware of. So this is something that is new, and as we look to the future, again, that may be something we want to ratchet back in future legislations, but opening it up for the remainder of this year seemed like a good use of the funds, and especially considering the rural economy at this time.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. We have Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. We all know that lawyers' kids become lawyers, pipe fitters' kids become pipe fitters, farmers. We've had 4-H and FFA or FHA, whatever it is, come through here, and every one of these young people say, I want to go into the agricultural business. Great. That's perfect.
I spent all summer meeting with young farmers trying to get into the business. We should open this up. We should be very careful how we open it up. Most of the young people that I was talking to and new farmers were, you know, less than, well, they weren't being able to buy an awful lot of land at anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 an acre. So I don't know that $100,000 is a large dollar figure. I think the idea of bringing more kids into farming and starting that whole new world of you know, us horrible, terrible, rotten people from the metro area going out to urban greater Minnesota to actually start businesses is a good idea. I would suggest, and it's not a question here, but this seems to have created a kind of kicking the hornet's nest, so to speak. It might be, if I can give some advice to the chair, is to have the department come in and explain the program, what it takes to go through with the application, how they check, how they double check. I mean, I look at it from the economic development piece and how we have fostered the not helping a small business, I don't want to call it cheating, but skirting the rules and regulations. And that would be a good thing because I think everyone at the table here has some concerns about it. So, Mr. Chair, I would suggest that you find time on our schedule, even if it's after deadlines, I hope, for the department to come in and give us all some comfort in this. Because I don't think $100,000, a tax credit, although it is a large amount of money for everyone in the state, it's not a large amount of money for people to get started in a farm.
Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Representative, I didn't know where you were going to go when you started talking, but I really appreciate your common sense approach and your ability to look at a wider. And I think the limit on this program is $50,000, if I'm not mistaken, so it's, relatively speaking, not a large amount in terms of the overall amount it takes to get into agriculture. But, yes, that's an excellent idea, and we will do that and get the folks in here to explain the program, and maybe we can get an extra publicity push to get out there. And as Representative Nelson was saying, this is the time of the year when these things are getting finalized, loans are getting approved, and the activity could be at its highest. So we'll do that. Thanks for the comment, and we will do it.
Okay, seeing no further. Oh, go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Chair. I just had an idea. Would urban farmers, young farmers that purchase land in the urban area, producing foods for local farmers markets, that sort of thing, would they be eligible for this loan?
Who wants to answer that? You guys are both looking. We'll have Ms. Place. Do you want to take the stab at that?
Mr. Chair, I really don't know. I can get back to you on that.
Okay.
That would be great. Thank you.
Did House Research have any opinion on that?
Mr. Chair, the author of the provision last year might have a comment, too, but I don't. We're talking about the tax credit at the moment, right? I don't see language in the members have before them the language about eligibility on page 13, section 41B.0391. I don't see language offhand there that specifies that the farm for which the credit is available is in a rural part of the state, but the author may want to comment as well.
Yeah, and I don't have it in front of me, but I believe it has to currently. If it's being used for agricultural purposes, then it can be transferred using the tax credit or rented using the tax credit, I believe. But
okay. Well, thank you, Representative Pearson. Any other questions from members?
Mr. Chair, I would also just add that, you know, that's a good point, very good point, and I see no reason why it shouldn't apply to anybody in urban agriculture. So we'll check on that
Thank you.
Sure that it is, or could be.
Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you. Does anyone else wish to testify for or against House File 4133? Okay.
Mr. Peterson, you have the floor. Go ahead. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'll be very brief. My name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and we appreciate the opportunity to offer support for two provisions in the bill. The one you've discussed quite a bit, the beginning farmer changes. This is something we have worked on and supported for 10 years, and really want to thank you for passing this the last year. And we have done a major push trying to get this out to our members. Had a lot of interest in it, a lot of people it didn't work for this year, but we are seeing, you know, a lot of interest. Ms. Place gave you the numbers on it. Our policy does support adding it to family members. You know, but we have had discussions in our organization about maybe putting a percentage or something in it. Might be something you might want to look at going down the road, whether it's 10% or 50% or whatever, so that, because the first priority was on those people who don't have a leg up from their family to get into farming. But we need, with the average age of a farmer being 58 years old and the new ag census, it's probably going to go up to 60 years old. Less than 10% of our farmers in Minnesota are under the age of 35. There's a lot of reasons to do that. There are definitions, too, in the bill that, as for family members, as to what you have to be actively farming, you have to have a Schedule F. There's a lot of things that we feel would provide security, as Ms. Place said. And also talking with her and the Department of Ag, we do feel better about that as well. The other piece we wanted to think is very important in this bill is in Section 24, which would expand the use of the Rural Finance Authority Disaster Recovery Loan Program by giving the Commissioner of Agriculture more authority to determine an agriculture emergency or a market disaster. As Ms. Place also mentioned, a lot of things we've seen come up and the state is not able to act fast enough. And so, like dairy right now, there's a lot of different dairy situations going on, and we do think that this could be helpful in those situations. And the disaster loan recovery program works for things that aren't typically covered by insurance. And so I really appreciate consideration and advocacy of that, and I think that's a very important program. So thank you for your consideration.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Peterson? Okay, seeing none, thank you for testifying. And then we have Amber Greaser with Farm Bureau. It's your floor.
Thank you. Good morning, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Amber Hansen-Glazer. I'm the Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau. I just wanted to briefly share Minnesota Farm Bureau's support for expanding the beginning farmer tax credit. I think there's been a lot of good discussions about some of the possible concerns, and we look forward to helping address some of those. But I think in the current economic climate, any opportunity we have to help support beginning farmers, regardless of their path into farming, is going to be important. I think Representative Pearson brought up a good point, that this is a first-in-the-nation program, and we've had a lot of questions and interest from other state farm bureaus and what Minnesota has been doing. So I think it's fantastic that we're leading the way into making sure the next generation of agriculture is able to continue farming. Open to any questions. Thank you.
Members, any questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Anyone else wishing to testify for or against House File 4133? Okay. Final words, Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm glad we got no questions dealing with this class AA eggs. I thought that was going to be a hot topic. But with that, Mr. Chair, I would encourage your support for the bill. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, members. House File 4133 is laid over. Okay, seeing nothing else, we are done. So we are adjourning. Thank you.